Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Minutes late, here we are, off and running on this 27th day of April 2023. Oh, it's a 22. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great low ground, and whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live, well, if you pop into the chat room right now, the aforesaid merry, wacky, zany, etc., you will be, and if, especially if you're a newbie, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Irish Dave and Anatole, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we have absolute privet hedges of thorns through which to wander, to negotiate. And, ow, ow, ew, ow, ow. You get the idea. And we'll just see where the program takes us. I want to thank you for your patience and forbearance last night. I had to close the program about a half an hour early because I was on a Q&A for Devil Put the Coal in the Ground. It was virtual, and I had the pleasure of chatting to a film screening audience in Beloit, Wisconsin. So I love Wisconsin, and I was in Wisconsin, if only virtually. But they were very moved by the film, and it was a great opportunity to expose more people to the vast and massive human rights and environmental justice abuses that are the stock and trade of the coal industry in West Virginia and Central Appalachia broadly. So, again, thanks for your forbearance. Hopefully, there should be no interruption of this program. We're probably going to get, we might get some wind, we might get some rain. But then again, you know, Appalachian Power can fail in a bright blue sky with not a breath of wind blowing or a drop of precipitation falling. So everything's an adventure on this with this coal-fried power grid, and we'll just have to see what happens. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Oh, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, I mentioned whatever time it was you're listening to the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, pretty please do us all a favor. You'll be helping out the Horn Family Community Congregation, of which you are a part, and you'll be helping me out and Brother Deacon Asa out, and well, everybody, like whatever podcast platform you're listening on, like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment about the podcast, any episode, every episode, and then share it with your friends and neighbors and tell them what an amazing little progressive independent conversation we've got going on here. Beholden to no one and entirely community made and community supported. So thank you. Thank you for doing that in advance. If you happen to be listening on TuneIn radio and you're using the TuneIn player, please mash that like heart button, and eventually we will get to 1,000 unique listeners just on that player alone, which will be exciting. Brother Deacon Asa checking in with me. Yes, Brother Deacon, I am recording on both interfaces. And I'll get you that server name here presently after the program, Brother Deacon. Thanks for all your help. Where to begin? Well, with gratitude. So we say thank you to our 27th day of the month subscribers. And that means, in particular, thank you. Thank you to you know what? We don't have any 27th day of the month subscribers. I checked earlier and I was like, what? But we don't. This is one of those days of the month when we have no subscribers. There are no subscribers on the 29th and the 30th and months with the 31st, because that's how PayPal rolls. But odd to find out that we have no subscribers on the 27th. But thank you. Thank you so much to Felicia. Thank you so very much for reaching out last night. And thank you to Lori. Thank you so much, Lori, in Michigan. I can happily announce that the fundraising goal is down to $1,445. We have today and tomorrow to raise $1,445 to be fully funded for the month of April. It's a little scary. That's $722.50 per program, but thank you. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Felicia. It helps a lot. So we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Where to begin? Let's do something vapid before we go wandering off into the swamp. I happened to be out earlier today, and I had National Petroleum Radio on. Was listening to some story about AI being used to create songs using the AI voices of musical artists. And a musical artist named Grimes, who has said, go ahead and use my voice and create some new stuff. I'm not a Luddite. I am not a technical incompetent. But I got to admit, a lot of this AI stuff you can miss me with. And I mentioned that because also in the vapid portion of the program, news of the release on a very limited basis of the trailer for Dune Part 2, the Frank Herbert classic from 1965. David Lynch made Dune into one movie, and now Denis Villeneuve is into at least two portions, two segments, and Dune Part 2 will be out later this year. The trailer was played at CinemaCon, I think, yesterday out in Vegas. It hasn't been publicly released yet, but this is apparently the part of the part of the story where Paul goes and rides a sandworm, etc. Timothy Chalamet, I don't know, is back as Paul Atreides. Zendaya is back as Chani. But two of the more exciting casting choices, at least as far as I'm concerned, are one, what's his name? Aaron, there it is. Austin. Austin Butler of the Elvis movie fame will be playing, there's a significant science fiction contingent in the Horn Family Community Congregation. So you'll understand my excitement. When David Lynch made his version of Dune, he went and got Sting to play Fade Rautha, the nephew of the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Curious how there's a Vladimir villain in this. Now there's a Vladimir villain in the early years of the third decade of the 21st century. But Fade Rautha will be played by Austin Butler. And in one of the weirdest line readings ever in film, in the original Dune film by David Lynch, Sting really, really, I mean, Sting emotes on a Shatner level. I will kill you! In a knife fight with Paul Atreides. So it'll be curious to see how Austin Butler plays Fade Rautha. But even more so, the one that really perked my pink little ears up was the fact that, and I don't recall this in the first film, the fact that Emperor Shaddam IV, the 85th Padishah Emperor of the known universe, will be played by Christopher Walken. Let that sink in. I just love that. Christopher Walken as the Emperor of the Known Universe, Shaddam IV. So now I'm decidedly eager to watch this film. And the reason I mentioned the AI of Grimes' voice and other AI vocals, and then, of course, the Dune Part 2 reference, is because of the commandment in Dune's Orange Catholic Bible. And it's mentioned frequently in the first novel. The commandment, thou shalt not build a machine in the image of a human mind. And that's how you wind up with Mentats, like Thuther Hawat. Because you cannot have artificial intelligence. And, of course, the Mentats are able to do Mentat things because of the spice found only on the planet Arrakis, Dune. And it seems like that whole commandment comes out of something that's referred to in the Dune universe as the Butlerian Jihad. Because, you see, Frank Herbert wrote Dune at a time when the West wasn't completely obsessed with hating Muslim culture. And so you wind up with Emperor Shaddam, really? Shaddam IV? The Padishah Emperor? Those aren't exactly British terms. Or French. And you get references to warfare as jihad. And the Butlerian Jihad winds up with a ban on artificial intelligence. And I couldn't help thinking about that commandment, thou shalt not build an image of a machine in the image of a human mind, when I heard the story on National Petroleum Radio about Grimes as an AI voice. We got AI voices, we got AI video, and it's only going to get more sophisticated until eventually we wind up with Skynet, which Leon Scum is apparently trying to build right now. I noticed that across the river at our Wendy's, and I think at our McDonald's too, I don't think they have open dining. I mean, the pandemic is long since done, but they don't have open dining. It's all drive-thru, which I find curious, to say the least. Emilio asks, did you like the David Lynch version? I couldn't get through it. I haven't read the books because I'm not a reader. Emilio, not a reader? Remind me of the late, great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, who was sitting in a Waffle House in Nashville after a set back when he was alive, and said the waitress came up to him, he was reading a book, and said, what you reading for? The word for at the end of the sentence, that dangling preposition, is what makes it. What you reading for? I loved the David Lynch version. It was such a David Lynch movie. And I loved the over-the-top costume design. Sean Phillips is the Reverend Mother Helen Gaius Mohim. Sometimes I think that given my high forehead, maybe I should go out Halloween next time. I've decided, come Halloween, and I've never been a Halloween person, but lately I've been thinking with my hair the way it is, I'm either going to get some ear point extensions and go as an extra from the road company of an extra elf from the road company of Lord of the Rings, or else I'm going to dress up as the Reverend Mother Helen Gaius Mohim. I think I can pull either one of them off. Thou shalt not make a machine in the image of a human mind. But like I said, I just wanted to start the program with a little bit of vapid frivolity before we get into the real, live, genuine, no kidding crazy. Because it's a very short trip to get there. And so we have a new video from Midas Touch. Okay, this is weird. I'll get this sorted out in a second. Apparently, Nitwit Nero just had a stinging defeat in court. Not the Eugene Carroll case. And I want to get to it. Just a second. So, yeah, you know, the Proud Boys are on trial for their role in January the 6th. And just minutes ago, Michael Popak over at Midas Touch had an update on that trial.
It's Michael Popak, Legal AF. Well, that Proud Boys trial of the members of that paramilitary right-wing white supremacist organization, along with the Oath Keepers, that organized and helped lead the attack on the Capitol, on the seat of our democracy, the siege that was laid on the Capitol by the insurrectionists, who have been charged with the highest charge in the playbook for the Department of Justice, that of seditious conspiracy, facing possible charges of up to 20 years in prison, came to a conclusion with closing arguments that tried to lay the blame for everything that they did, all the planning, the organizing, the attacks on law enforcement, the attacks on the Capitol, the attempts to assassinate members of Congress, put that at the feet of one Donald J. Trump. We don't have to guess, because the lawyers said it out loud, said the quiet part out loud in front of the jury, when defense lawyers, for instance, for Enrique Tarrio, Naib Hassan, and the defense lawyer for Joe Biggs, the notorious Norm Pattis, a lawyer who was recently disbarred or suspended for a short amount of time because he represented Alex Jones in the defamation case brought by the Sandy Hook families and did bad things and was suspended. In fact, his license was just reinstated the day before the trial started. That Norm Pattis. All they did in their closing, as a misdirection play, as a diversionary tactic, to try to get the jury off of all of the video evidence, text message evidence, social media evidence, GoPro videos, captured audio files that demonstrate that all of these people did really bad things, including seditious conspiracy, to misdirect from that, to try to confuse the jury. They say, well, it wasn't my guy. Yes, it was my guy, but he was like a meat puppet. He was like a meat puppet, and the puppeteer was Donald Trump. It was his anger that fueled this, they said in closing. It was his authorization as commander-in-chief to the Proud Boys for them to be Donald Trump's army and do his bidding.
Stand back and stand by.
It'll be wild when he tweeted out in December for everyone to show up on Jan 6th. It was Donald Trump's anger and my...
And I get upset with myself for my little mispronunciation. Donald Chunt? Dude, I'm proud of you. But we get the idea. You know, the Proud Boys done chucked their orange God Emperor right under the bus. And I can only hope the skid marks were profound. There, I've seen a good bit of coverage of this today. It's a mess, and frankly, it takes a maggot a while to figure out that he doesn't have their backs. But once the light goes on, There's nothing to stop somebody like an Enrique Tarrio from... I think he's actually telling the truth. And they're telling the jury about it. So expect Nitwit Nero's fat, orange little thumbs on his curiously tiny hands to be thumbing away on Tripe Social, putting out a tripe
about how the Proud Boys, they've abandoned me. They're rhinos.
Sure. Right. I can't wait until the verdict comes out. And in the meantime, Nitwit Nero is so scared of what's going on with Jack Smith's investigation. This is simply ludicrous. His pettifoggers have reached out to beg be the Intelligence Committee of the House of Representatives and the chairman, Mike Turner, a maggot from Ohio, to do something that he doesn't have the power to do. Maggot lawyers John Rowley and James Trustee and Timothy Parlatori have sent a letter to maggot Mike Turner saying the Department of Justice is not the appropriate agency to conduct investigations pertaining to the mishandling or spillage of classified material. They're not investigating a box that got dumped out. This investigation is antithetical to the principles of a fair and impartial search for the truth. It is abundantly clear through this investigation that the institutional practice and procedures within the White House for the handling of classified materials drastically differ from the long-established standard operating procedures employed by various agencies of the intelligence community as well as the U.S. military. This is, of course, complete and absolute horseshit. Nonetheless, the pettifoggers continued. The DOJ needlessly ratcheted up the adversarial nature of the matter, resulting in a waste of time and resources and a disturbing loss of public trust. This serves no legitimate purpose as DOJ's actions further erode constitutional rights while blindly compromising its own ability to provide a comprehensive account of what happened. I think we know what happened. But the pleading continued from these noble pleaders. From the inception of this matter, rather than working cooperatively to ensure the return of all marked documents and correct any procedural failures, the DOJ team chose a path of aggressive combativeness. In doing so, it compromised the evidence, constitutional rights, and in many instances, the professional ethics of its prosecutors. It has sought... Trump lawyers complaining about somebody's professional ethics. It is to chortle. It has sought to criminalize a civil matter, pursue an unprecedented... Oh, well, you would rather have him be sued civilly? Well, okay, just as quick as he's done being sued by E. Jean Carroll, y'all can take a number. Pursue an unprecedented investigation of a former president while bristling at... Unprecedented of a former president. While bristling at... May I introduce you to William Jefferson Clinton? While bristling at transparency and is desperately seeking to justify its abominable conduct. Abominable. Sure. Abominable. Abominable. This is something commonly referred to among the legal community as grasping at straws. It is also hilarious. Darlene in Connecticut pointing out, yesterday, Popok accidentally called Fox News fuck news. He backtracked to apologize and then laughed at the Freudian slip. I wonder how Freudian that slip was. And we'll probably get around to the fact that testicle-toasting man of masculinity, Tuckio Rose Carlson, finally issued his statement yesterday on why he was let go. It turns out he's a victim of a conspiracy against the deep state, or by the deep state against him, because he's a truth teller. Suman says, anytime you use the Trumpist, disgustus, and skid marks in the same sentence, I recommend using a trigger warning so we can put our food away immediately. Too many disgusting associations. Well, I didn't expect to be ruining anything in your time zone at this point in the program, Suman. I mean, sure, the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, but, you know, what time do you have supper there? Oh, wait, this is, I'm sorry, this is the Hobbit's second lunchtime in the Pacific Time Zone. And Billable Rick's mid-afternoon snack. We regret the error. What's that, Clarence? Forehead for Halloween. Morticia from the Addams Family or Lily from the Munsters. These ladies are legends for Halloween costumes. Yeah, I love Sean Phillips in the first Dune movie. She's so menacing. And frankly, I have the hair to do the elf. I don't know. Arwen's great-grandmother or something. I mean, they created female characters for The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, so why not? Ralphs, thank you so much. Ralph says, I'm offering a $25 challenge in honor of Trump's lawyer's spillage. Wonder if that was an unplanned rapid disassembly. Thank you, Ralph. So hopefully there's somebody out there with $25 that would like to see it turn into $50. And Ralph's is waiting to do so. All you got to do is pony up the $25. And that'll get us down to $13.95, which is a big damn deal. Now, thank you, Ralphs. The other thing that is dominating at least my notifications late this afternoon is the fact that the former Vice President of the United States, Mike Pencilneck Geek, having lost and lost and lost and lost and lost, spent the day today in front of the special counsel's grand jury. He was there from 9 a.m. to 4:30 today, testifying, one presumes, under oath, one hopes, in front of the grand jury. Because late last night, the Circuit Court of Appeals, again,
so much losing. You're gonna get sick of all the losing.
Well, Nitwit Nero lost his last-ditch effort to keep Mike Pencilneck Geek from testifying. And there wasn't enough time for counsel for the parking garage or whoever, or Joe Tacopina, who will ask his client to please stop trying to incite another riot from yesterday's program. Well, his pettifoggers didn't have time to get it up to crooked old Fappy and Sammy Bad Breath et al. So before there was even time to do that, there sat Mike Pencilneck Geek. According to NBC News, they spotted multiple black SUVs with tinted windows entering the parking garage in the morning. Two black SUVs entered the courthouse garage around 9 a.m., an entrance that would allow witnesses to head up to the grand jury rooms on the third floor without being seen in the public areas of the courthouse. This was a big day. We, of course, don't know what was said because grand jury proceedings are secret. But by the time you get around to examining the former Vice President of the United States in regard to the domestic terror attack of January 6, 2021, you got to figure they've gotten pretty much everybody else. So I wonder if, having heard from Mike Pence, Jack Smith will then look at the grand jury and say, well, you've heard everybody. You want to do anything? And then the grand jury says, can we indict Trump? You sure as hell can. And I wonder about how much self-respect somebody like Mike Pencilneck Geek has at this point. He spent 4 years treating Trump like daddy, 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 only to have Trump stand idly. Well, he didn't even stand idly by.
Mike Pence has what has it coming to him.
At the same time that the maggots were singing, "We'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree. We'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree." Probably whistled a couple of bars of Dixie or some such. So this is one of those watch this space moments. We'll see. See what happens. And then there's the guy who Marginal Trailer Queen referred to as white, male, and Christian. What's his name? Teixeira? Jack Teixeira? Early on after his arrest, there were reports that Jack Teixeira was a right-wing racist piece of shit. You know, now the federal government has gone into court and pled exactly that. They asked the court to keep him in extended incarceration pending trial because of all the evidence that they had developed as to what kind of a threat Jack Teixeira poses. One of the things that we know is that, or at least the government has learned now, is that Jack Teixeira had a lot more documents than the ones he released on the Discord server, at least as far as we can find out. Yeah, back in November, he wrote on social media that he wanted to kill a ton of people in order to, gosh, where have we heard language like this before? Call the weak-minded. And then when he'd been arrested and the feds executed a search warrant, it turns out he had a virtual arsenal of weapons, including bolt-action rifles, AR and AK-style weapons, and a bazooka, many of which he kept mere feet from his bed. It's the bazooka. The quote about the bazooka that grabbed me, because at one point in time, I think it was in the Heller decision, fat dead Tony Scalia, son of a Mussolini fanboy, I might add. You know, the Foscase never fall far from the tree. But fat dead Tony Scalia said that as far as he was concerned, there might be a constitutional right for everyday ordinary citizens to own, wait for it, a bazooka. And we are not talking about the bubble gum. And then it turns out that back in March 2018, a classmate overheard Jack Teixeira say that talking about weapons and saying that he was talking about making Molotov cocktails and bringing guns to the school and making, because of course, racist threats. So he will have a detention hearing beginning at 1 o'clock today in Worcester, Massachusetts, which I know now to pronounce Wista. The government also said that he accessed and may still have an access to a trove of classified information that would be of tremendous value to hostile nation states, that it could offer him safe harbor, Vlad, and attempt to facilitate his escape from the United States. But back to his suspension from school in March 2018. Well, he joined the Guard, the Air Guard, in 2019. This is going to involve a little bit of not really ciphering, but just mindfulness, I guess. This, and I would not be surprised if we eventually find out that he's an incel or a MGTOW or a man's rights advocate. But he joined the Air Guard in 2019 and would have received his classification by 2020. And even though he had a history of terroristic threats and suspensions from school, among other things, he said he wanted to go and shoot up a middle school. Pretty sure that's the same guy. Somehow or another, he got a top secret clearance during the Nitwit Nero administration. I only mention this because the Nitwit Nero administration had, on a couple of occasions, overridden refusals of security clearances to make sure that people that they wanted to have security clearances got security clearances. Is this a case of that? It seems the most remote of possibilities that a brand newbie out of basic and airman school would have reached the notice of Maggot Central, but stranger things have happened. So we'll be keeping an eye on this story. And I wonder if the Pentagon, the folks therein, are casting about trying to figure out how he got where he was. But Jack Teixeira had a cache of weapons, including a bazooka. Fat Dead Tony would be so proud. But he's not the only one. In New Jersey, in East Brunswick to be particular, a maggot by the name of David Herrera ran for the town council, has been discovered to have had a cache of weapons of his own. Upon executing a search, law enforcement found 17 large capacity ammunition magazines at his house, and they had reason to go to his house because good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican maggot David Herrera, who lost his election, said he was going to light up the mayor and town council. A concerned citizen reported this to law enforcement, to the FBI, in fact, that they feared a threat of a shooting against the local government in East Brunswick, New Jersey. He really is a, sure enough, no kidding, maggot. And we know this because after he lost the election, David Herrera said that the election was, come on, everybody, one, two, three, stolen! And was unwilling to accept the fact that the people of East Brunswick, New Jersey, did not want him on the town council. So when the FBI paid a visit, the officer found a rifle magazine on top of a chair on the front porch. There was a bag labeled P-Mag 25 rifle magazine, 7.62 by 51, 25 round capacity. That was for an AK-47. And while they would not, while the residents would not allow the law enforcement officers into the house, what they'd seen of the magazine was enough that they went to Middlesex County prosecutors, got a search warrant, and found 15 more magazines for the high-capacity rounds, or the high-capacity magazines for the rounds. And then they found a shit ton of weapons. This almost feels like a pattern. It's beginning to feel predictable. And then there's a couple named Hannah Say and Kyle Kruger. They're from Texas. And they have been dismissed from a lawsuit filed under the KKK Act. They were dismissed after having issued an apology for their participation in stalking and harassing a Biden campaign bus in Texas on the last day of early voting in that hot, benighted state. The plaintiffs in the case are Eric Cervini, Wendy Davis, David Gins, and Timothy Holloway. All of them were workers with the Biden-Harris campaign, and they sued Hannah Say and Kyle Kruger and the other six defendants under the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. The suit paper said the defendants participated in, quote, a modern-day conspiracy to intimidate voters in trucks in the light of day in the same way that the law outlawed intimidation while hooded on horseback in the dark of night in 1871. Defendants violated the Klan Act and Texas law. Plaintiffs bring this lawsuit to obtain a remedy for the injuries plaintiffs suffered as a result of the defendants' unlawful conspiracy in which they were literally and forcefully driven out of town for their political beliefs. You probably remember the story. The maggots literally surrounded the Biden-Harris bus on the highway as it was moving, forced it to slow to an almost non-motive state, brought their vehicles within inches of the bus, and one of the defendants later bragged as to having slammed into a staffer's follow car. But at least they were sorry. The lawsuit continues against the other six defendants. Hannah Say and Kyle Kruger were boyfriend, girlfriend. One wonders if they will stay sorry, remain remorseful. And Hannah Say herself texted, "We canceled them!" But now says she didn't feel like she'd thought it through completely. They both said they learned about the Trump. This was one of those Trump train moments. They wound their way through West Virginia, here where I am, and snarled traffic for miles and miles and miles. And they harassed the bus all the way from New Braunfels to Austin. As I said, the suit continues against the other defendants, who are Eleazar Cisneros, Randy Say, Steve Say, wait. That's Hannah Say's mommy and daddy, who turned out to be two members of the New Braunfels Trump train. Jolynn Maceros, Robert Maceros, and Dolores Park. I hope they're at least ridden into bankruptcy. news out today that Nashville police say that they will, at some point, release the manifesto authored by Audrey Hale, the Covenant School murderer in Nashville. In reporting on it, Fox News made a point of saying that Hale identified as transgender. Hale slept with journals on other school shootings under her bed in her parents' house. Funny, identified as transgender, but they're calling her. They're calling him her. Police seized the journals and a trove of documents and electronic devices, court filings reveal. Among them were hand-drawn maps of the school. Hale also left behind a suicide note on a desk under one of several laptops police recovered near a list of passwords in the bedroom. The motive has not yet been made public, but police are not hiding the fact that Audrey Hale was a former student at Covenant School, and that Audrey Hale specifically targeted the school and its church. And we know for a fact that that school had provided succor, had provided a haven to at least one Christian white man who had a taste for pedophilia.
Groomer!
Only he really was. When the news came out, Covenant Presbyterian did everything they could to cover it up. But eventually the man who was the co-author of Mike Huckabee's campaign biography admitted to having sex with the underage girl. I wonder how heavily redacted the manifesto will be when it finally does come out. Thank you, Clarence. Clarence in South Carolina has answered Ralph's spillage challenge. So, in fact, we are down to $13.95. Thank you, Clarence. Much appreciated. And we've got... Okay, so here's the lay of the land. I got to pay a power bill tonight of $500. Tomorrow, remember, I also have to... Well, Annette and I are going to get up about 5 o'clock in the morning so that we can both get appropriately beautiful for Walmart. It's not like going to Dollar General or something where you don't have to get dressed up. Because we have to be at Walmart at 7 to meet. Wait a minute, let me see. Is this? Huh? Dang it. There it is. We have to be at Walmart's Automotive Center tomorrow at 7. To meet Roy, who will be able to sort out all of our warranty woes. Uh-huh, yeah. I thought the harp would be good. So I got to pay the power bill, deal with the tires, and a couple of other things. But the power bill and the tires and... They're critical, especially the power bill. So that's why we need to at least knock out half of the fundraising goal at $13.95. So that would be, we knock out another, $6.50. I don't even know if there's enough people to knock that out, but we'll try. Thank you, Ralphs, for the spillage challenge, and thank you, Clarence, for answering it. Thank you so much. And yeah, Flavio noting Jerry Springer, nil nisi bonum, no. Jerry Springer's death was announced today at age 79. Flavio says, I think I may have watched one or two episodes of the Jerry Springer show. And that was enough for me. Jerry Springer was responsible for the coarsening, the trashification of television. He created the taste for it. He hastened the idiocracy we are in way ahead of schedule in the late 1990s. As Stuart Heritage wrote in The Guardian in 2020, it is almost impossible now to grasp how huge the Jerry Springer show was in its time. In a typical episode, Springer would play ringmaster to a tawdry parade of domestic disputes. In episodes with titles such as I'm Pregnant by a Transsexual and Lesbolicious, Springer would introduce a guest, hear their complaints, bring on an aggressor, and watch as they verbally and physically attacked each other. It was all exploitative with no redeeming value. Springer stated in an October 2000 interview with the Reuters news agency, I would never watch my show. I'm not interested in it. It's not aimed towards me. This is just a silly show. Flavio says, well, glad to know, Jerry. A couple of episodes were enough for me to know it wasn't aimed at me either. I think in time people, historians of the medium, will come to recognize Jerry Springer as the actual father of reality television. It would go on to become considerably more sophisticated, especially with Survivor. Isn't that what it was called? Is that still on? Probably. But this was the original reality TV. This was the format that people like Oprah and Phil Donahue and Sally Jesse Raphael, problems, we all have them, had pioneered. But it wasn't quite as tawdry. But I can say this. All three of those, Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Jerry Springer, actually showed transsexuals who were out. No matter how tawdry the affairs in which they were involved were, they were out and living as themselves. And it was about the only representation there was in that era. Jerry would go on to have shows in which he made the audience guess which person was the tranny out of, say, a group of 13 beautiful women. And the audience is on, and it's like this, I can always tell which ones was trannies. And a lot of the time they'd be wrong. And it was really coarse and it was really gross. But by the same token, it was like, hey, I recognize them. And of course, if anybody else was in the room, I don't want to watch that. Click. It was a paycheck. Jerry Beads. Jerry Beads. Jerry Beads. And it was so transactional and so obviously staged. But and while Flavio says, um, he was responsible for the coarsening, the trashification of television? Disagree, Flavia. You know who was responsible for the coarsening and trashification of television? The advertisers who bought time on it because of the people who tuned in religiously to view it. Capitalism does not create demand. I mean, they can try to. Advertisers try to make you buy their brand of toothpaste or hard-on pills or what have you. But there has to be a target market first. Was it Bruce Springsteen who sang in the 90s, what was it, 67 channels and nothing on? The rise of cable taught us that there is a market for everything in this country. But to say that Jerry Springer brought on the trashification of television is to ignore a whole lot of pre-existing trash. A ton of it. Because people wanted to watch it. I think that's the position that we have to take relative to a story like this. Because if we don't, we can't look to, say, the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings in the 13th Congressional District of Georgia and blame them for the existence of Marginal Trailer Queen. She did not spring fully formed into the well of the house like Athena from the head of Zeus. She was put there by awful, terrible, horrible, really bad people. And they're the same kind of people that watch Jerry Springer. Because Jerry Springer and the people who produced Jerry Springer knew their audience. Flavio says, Jerry Springer exploited trans people. Phil Donahue was the better guy. Phil Donahue exploited a lot of people. The very nature of programs like that is exploitation. It's not news. It's the entertainmentification of information. And it goes way back beyond either one of those or Oprah or anybody else. It goes back to when ABC News put the guy who made Wide World of Sports famous on Sundays on ABC, the head of the news division, Rune Arledge. It's a continuum. And from there to Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, what have you, it's a really bright line. I had no idea, Randy Radar. Survivor is still on. What a disgusting show. And, of course, what was it, Fear Factor that gave, first it was news radio. And Joe Rogan was kind of an enjoyable character on that show. But then when Phil Hartman's wife offed Phil Hartman, the show didn't have much life left in it. Joe Rogan moved on to another reality TV show called Fear Factor. And, you know, the next thing you know, he's sitting around back-slapping with Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, and the rest is history. Jerry Springer's a data point. He is not the first cause or the prime mover. Oh, it's 57 channels and there's nothing on. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Randy Radar. My high school, Lee in New York, says, I was told that when I graduated, the most famous graduates were Simon and Garfunkel. Later, the most famous graduate was Jerry Springer. Oh, my. Quite the high school you went to, Lee. As to a hobbit, Lee said, okay, Robin, you have the hair, but do you have the ears? No, they sell those on Amazon, little pointy ears, and they'll stick perfectly through my my white elven hair. And here's something horrifying. There are people actually, and when I say people, maybe it's two or three, I don't know. But there are people actually going to plastic surgeons to have their ears made pointy. I actually saw a short about this online by a plastic surgeon I follow, because I do that. He's like, don't do this. This is really hard surgery. It'll fuck up your hearing. Just order the pointy ears from wherever, Amazon. And I'm sure at some point in time that'll become a Republican panic du jour. I remember back nearly 20 years ago when the West Virginia legislature was introducing bills to ban, and I'm not kidding, tongue splitting. Because all the little hillbilly kids were apparently eager to get their tongue split like a snake. I don't remember what happened to that moral panic, but I do remember talking about how unutterably stupid a thing it was for the West Virginia legislature to even give air to the idea. There are just some things you don't whisper into the ear of the universe. But speaking of West Virginia, because we do that here, well, there he is. The senior senator from West Virginia. Joe to the mansion born. Fossil fool. Coal broker. Self-dealer. They had a little vote in the Senate today on a resolution under the something called the Congressional Review Act. That's a mechanism whereby the Congress can act to override administrative rules and regulations promulgated by the executive department. It was all hands on deck for this vote. The Congressional Review Act was triggered to defeat Biden administration regulations regarding emissions for heavy-duty trucks. This joint resolution nullifies the environmental protection. Look, it's nullification. This joint resolution nullifies the Environmental Protection Agency rule relating to control of air pollution from new motor vehicles, heavy-duty engine and vehicle standards, contained at 88 Federal Register 4296 and published on January 24, 2023. The rule modifies emission standards to reduce air pollution, including ozone and particulate matter from heavy-duty engines and vehicles. There's our old nemesis, particulate matter. Because most of these vehicles are diesel, and they're filthy, and the particulate matter that comes off of diesel engines is every bit as toxic, every bit as disease-inducing, every bit as cancer-causing as the dust that comes off of mountaintop removal sites, about which Joe Manchin does also not give a flying fuck at a rolling donut. So like I said, they have a little vote today in the Senate. And the vote was 50 to 49. Guess who won? The nullifiers won. The nullifiers won by one vote. Every Republican plus Joe to the Manchin born. Once again, we cite that law of nature first enunciated and discovered by moi. No one named Manchin ever does anything that does not benefit someone named Manchin. So Joe Manchin wants more pollution. Joe Manchin wants more particulate matter. Joe Manchin wants more asthma, just like all the other Republicans do. But why, Robin? Why was it a 50 to 49 vote? I thought we had a majority in the Senate. Well, we should. But we don't. Because the senior senator from California is at home in California since February and unable to perform the duties and obligations of her office. And so this is just another vote that she has missed. And we talked about this previously. It was this past Friday on the front porch. And I talked about how gross it makes me feel to be hollering for her resignation. I feel like I'm engaging in ableism, ageism, sexism. And if you recall that Friday on the front porch conversation, it was also and rankly speculative. That it could be that Senator Feinstein is so far gone she cannot manifest the requisite state of mind to resign. She's been out of public view longer than some Soviet leaders. And this is so dangerous. So now this stupid resolution in favor of more air pollution and more disease, heads to the House, where it will pass by a narrow majority. Hopefully the Democrats will stand united against it. Jesus. So when it passes the House, then it will go to the desk of Joe Biden, who will veto it. And they will not be able to manifest the two-thirds vote necessary in both houses to override the veto. But the fact of the matter is, it should not have gotten that far. It had Dianne Feinstein been there, and even with Joe Manchin's defection, it would have been a 50-50 vote. Vice President Harris comes in and he goes, "Y'all, I'm the president of the Senate," and I say, "Nay," and it's done, and it goes no further. Instead, we have this. And I would be untruthful if I said that I don't sympathize with people like Ro Khanna, California Democrat, this morning, said, because Senator Feinstein was absent, the Senate overturned a Biden rule that would cut pollution from heavy-duty trucks and causes harm to people's lungs. We are putting decorum over democracy and our values. It's time for Senator Feinstein to step down gracefully. And I wonder if even Nancy Pelosi can still maintain her support for Senator Feinstein in the face of this. A person identified as a Democratic strategist and communications consultant by the name of Sawyer Hackett. This vote was, I guess it was yesterday, not today. Feinstein's refusal to resign negates the expanded Senate majority Democrats overcame tremendous odds to achieve. Republican measures are passing in a Democratic Senate. Step down. An immigration lawyer named Jeremy Rosenberg in San Francisco went to Twitter to say, unconscionable, yet completely avoidable. It's past time for Senator Feinstein to step down. And a reporter by the name of Andrew Desiderio said, Manchin's warpath against his own party continues. He announces he'll back a GOP-led resolution to overturn EPA emissions rules for trucks. Manchin specifically said, the last couple of years have shown that truck drivers keep our country moving. However, the Biden administration wants to burden the trucking industry with oppressive regulations that will increase prices by thousands of dollars and push truck drivers and small trucking companies out of business. When our country faces record high inflation and vulnerable supply chains, we cannot let the EPA continue to seize unrestrained power and create regulations that devastate our economy. I'm proud to support this resolution to stop this government overreach. Bloodthirsty fool. Of course, guess what kind of trucks haul the coal that Joe Manchin brokers to the power plant that Joe Manchin's family owns? Huh? Yeah. Heavy-duty trucks that emit vast and filthy clouds of diesel smoke. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is out in California. I hope Gavin Newsom is a strong enough governor that maybe he could exercise a little sway and, you know, drop by the mansion. I'm sorry, that's so rude of me. Drop by the Feinstein estate and say, here, please sign. The country's in trouble. You've done great things. You gotta go. And then appoint a caretaker. We talked about Barbara Boxer, who won't run, but will show up to vote, knows how the Senate works, and knows what a shitbird Joe Manchin is. Steve from Georgia says, what do you expect from a goon who was featured on Hannity the very night Tucker got booted? Irony, thou art a goddess. Matt in San Francisco asks me, is Manchin afraid of justice? Well, where this is concerned, yeah, the answer is going to be, oh, protected your coal truck driving jobs here in West Virginia for our hard-working coal truck drivers. I feel so bad for those guys. If you had even the beginnings of an understanding, and I'm not saying you don't, of what a shitty job it is to drive a coal truck. You're driving on terrible roads, in terrible conditions, in a truck that the company sold to you, which you're buying from them, rent to own, and for which you are paid as a 1099 contractor and not an employee, so if you get hurt, you're in charge of your own workers' compensation, you're in charge of your own insurance, and by the time you get the truck paid off, it'll be lucky if it still has wheels on it. And you're paid by the ton and not by the mile. So the only way you make any money is by running overloaded, which, of course, makes the engine work harder. In answer to your question, Matt, yeah, he is. Because, see, what Matt and what Flavio and Ralps have alluded to is that today, make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice announced that he would like to be make West Virginia great big old junior senator Jim Justice. He's going to run for the Republican nomination in May of 2024 to challenge Joe to the Manchin Bourne. And Joe is decidedly weakened. I'm already seeing the ads about how Joe signed on to Joe Biden's communist green energy climate change bill, and he's killing jobs in West Virginia. Jobs, jobs, jobs. And Joe has a problem. Because there aren't many Democrats who enthusiastically support him. And as often as not, he's won his election, this most recent one, rather narrowly. He has won his election because the Republican nominee was just too gross. 2018, it was Pill Push and Patty Morrison, who is now going to run for governor of West Virginia and has the inside track because the Democratic Party of West Virginia is moribund, in the wilderness, at sea, lost, a hot mess. And about the only Democrat who can win anything in West Virginia heretofore has been Joe Manchin. And so, quite honestly, and I seldom ask you for this, I would appreciate your sympathy, your empathy, and yes, in fact, your pity. Because come November 2024, I'm going to have a Senate race where I can either vote for Joe Manchin or probably make West Virginia great big old Jim Justice. And the only thing I can say to differentiate the two, I mean, one's a coal broker, the other's a coal baron. They are both slimy, but the biggest difference I can find between the two is that Joe Manchin has never used the engines of the government of the United States to attack a marginalized minority. You know who I'm talking about. And that's cold comfort. Because Joe Manchin has certainly used his position over the years he's been in the Senate and as governor to attack innocent people who simply have the misfortune of living near a place that a coal company decided to blast into Kingdom Come and fill little lungs with particulate sandstone ultrafines. Poison water, poison air, poison bodies, poison lungs, poison brains, poison hearts. Poison. That's all I got. So I'm gonna ask straight up. Because I'm confident that will be the choice I face in November of 2024. Joe Manchin or Jim Justice. Tell me what to do. Really? Not kidding. There have been so many races where I have simply left the race that Joe Manchin was in blank. This will be the political fight of his life if he chooses to run. Because remember, there's still speculation out there that what he will actually do is not run, and in fact, run a spoiler third-party, third-way ticket for the presidency of the United States in an effort to get Donald Trump back in the White House. I am not being a bitch here. Tell me what to do. It is so easy to piss and moan about Joe Manchin, and God knows I have pissed and moaned buckets full this segment of the program began with me talking about another perfidious betrayal of by Joe Manchin of people who like to breathe air. In the particular case of this rollback of the Biden administration air quality rule, well, what roll call said was the EPA's nitrogen oxide, NOx, rule, finalized in December, requires heavy and medium-duty vehicles starting in model year 2027. Not now, not next year, 4 years from now to meet the most stringent emissions reduction option first proposed by the agency a year ago. Nitrogen oxides are produced from fuel burning and mixed with other pollutants in the atmosphere to create smog and acid rain. High levels of smog have been linked to respiratory diseases and asthma. The EPA estimates that the rule will reduce NOx emissions from the heavy-duty truck fleet by 48% by 2045. If the most ambitious goals outlined in the rule are met by 2045, the EPA projects that early onset asthma cases among children will decline by 18,000 per year and premature deaths will go down by 2,900 annually. So let's turn that on its head. Joe Manchin voted in favor of 2,900 premature deaths per year. Joe Manchin voted in favor of early onset asthma cases of 18,000 a year among children. Now, maybe people who don't know Joe Manchin the way I know Joe Manchin, maybe people who don't know what it is to live in the sacrifice zone of Appalachia, maybe they'll be outraged by that. Maybe it'll look like something new and horrible and shocking to the conscience.
but it doesn't to me. To me, that is just Joe Manchin being Joe Manchin. It is the same Joe Manchin who turned his back on peer-reviewed science year after year after year after year that showed that children in the sacrifice zone were being poisoned, that their little bodies were being horribly altered in the womb, that their mothers and daddies and grandmothers and grandfathers were being stolen from them early by the coal industry at whose feet Joe Manchin worships, because the worship pays for Joe Manchin. Because a Manchin never does anything that doesn't benefit someone named Manchin. So 18,000 asthma cases among children will inure to the benefit of Joe Manchin. 2,900 premature deaths annually will inure to the benefit of Joe Manchin. So I'm not being sarcastic. Tell me what to do in November 2024. I'm open to suggestions. Vote for a third party candidate. Vote for an independent. Vote for somebody who does not have a prayer of winning. And all votes for whom will inure to make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice. There will be two foxes in the hen house, and this hen doesn't see a lot of alternatives. Meanwhile, Governor Newsom, I know you've got DiFi's phone number somewhere. Call Mr. Fi. Do something. Because this country can't stand too many more of these votes. Please? Steve from Georgistan, could Manchin flip? Would you be surprised if you woke up one morning and Joe was on Fox News declaring, I did not leave the Democrat Party, the Democrat Party left me, blah, 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 blah. Steve, we've been over this. There is no percentage in him flipping. They would still primary his ass. Because Republicans hate his guts. And they will hate his guts if he changes parties. Because as noxious as he isn't nearly noxious enough. He isn't nearly mean enough. He isn't nearly hateful enough. He isn't nearly vicious enough. He isn't nearly cruel enough to satisfy the maggots. And maybe that seems unbelievable to you, but I'm telling you, it's for real. Now, if he was to do that, no, I would not be surprised. And I'm the one who penned an editorial in the Charleston Gazette a decade ago saying, Joe, do exactly that. Be a Republican. And clear a little space for a real Democrat to run. Jeremy in Vermont says, I'm always impressed that no one does when a coal rolling 4x4 blackens the air around it just to gain a few feet in a line of cars. More smoke is emitted if they're passing a Prius. Oh, yeah. Around here, dudes will buy a
diesel pick-em-up truck. And then they'll modify it, probably illegally, so that it will belch more smoke. Because that's manly smoke. That's very masculine smoke. And then I'll be driving around, and we'll see some big old diesel pickup truck pass us on the four lane. And I just look at her and think, tiny penis. Tiny, itsy bitsy, little teensy weensy peensy. Because you know. Sometimes when they pass by, I hold up my little finger, sort of bent. Let's see. Randy Radar, Senator Joe Manchin, The Art of the Steal. Yeah, you could say that. Matt, I hope that answers your question. Let's see. Theo, going back to Unreality TV. Hey, Robin. Hey, Theo. The producers of Trash Talk TV Radio absolutely loved to invite Wiccan clerics onto their shows in the 1990s, only to sandbag them with unexpected adversarial counterpoint guests who were either Satanists or right-wing nutjob Jesus-holics. Conversely, one friend upended a town meeting program, which was after them there Satanists, by calmly going in and explaining his connections to a Wiccan pagan church and elucidating the realities of who we are and what we do, leaving the host and his producers in a complete blither-dither after the taping was completed. It's always fun to flip the narrative. John in southern Minnesota says, before Jerry Springer changed television, he ran as a Democrat for Ohio governor and lost. He even had a short-lived talk show on Air America. I remember. He was a liberal. From an interview years ago, he said the following, I'm a political junkie, so that's my interest, he told Huffington Post in 2011. I'm liberal, but I watch the three majors. Obviously, I watch MSNBC, also CNN and Fox, which is what I would call ridiculously to the right. Asked which he would consider more dangerous, Fox News or his eponymous talk show, Springer responded, well, Fox, because it has more consequence. Our show is obviously silly. People on our show get angry, but the next day they're dating someone else. It's never taken health care from anyone. It's never put us into a war. So, we are, I have Phila Robstard, an hour and 41 minutes away. We have such a long way to go to see this program fully funded and are at risk of not being on the air tomorrow night or at any time until the bills get paid. If you want to help out, the PayPal button's over at headon.live. I know this is a desperate, I know this sounds desperate, but only because it is. It's frightful. So if you'd like to help fund the program, there's no better time than now. The end of the month is always scary. And it's just a lot more scary right now. So something like, something like 650 to go if we want to, split this program and tomorrow. But anything will help. By the way, like and subscribe on the podcast. Jeremy says, come on, Robin, get with the times. Modifying is called deleting, and yes, it makes it highly illegal come inspection time in most states. Oh, they just put it up on a shelf in the garage till it's time to get them inspected. And in West Virginia, probably wouldn't even notice. Because we don't have any air pollution regulations to speak of. Remember, it's still, there have been nights during the hardest part of winter when the Confederates next door burning coal I've left the studio gagging and halfway sick with a headache because I've been breathing coal smoke for 3 hours back here. Wish I was kidding. And there's not a blessed thing you can do about it because coal keeps the lights on. And at this point in time, the only people who are burning coal for heat in this state are just assholes. So let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Robin, I got word from the afterlife that Jerry's got his show back on.
Oh, really?
Tonight's guest, yes, tonight's guest will be Lot and his daughters.
Oh. Wait a minute. Oh, Dave. Sometimes you just go places I can't expect. There's no way to predict it, and this is one of them. Yeah, tonight. Yeah, which what would be today on Jerry Springer in the afterlife? Which daughter's hotter? Oh, come on.
Exactly, and the audience is made up of all the MAGA Republicans who died of COVID. So he's got his built-in audience.
Yeah, truth.
And the funny thing is, the night that that Martin Luther King was assassinated, Jerry Springer was in Indianapolis because he was Robert Kennedy's press secretary. He was a spokesman for the campaign. And he was in Indianapolis because I saw a special talking about Kennedy talking to a largely black audience. He was down in a predominantly black neighborhood that night, and he was told not to go down there because feelings were awfully raw and they couldn't guarantee his safety. But he went down there anyway and made one of the greatest pieces of oratory I think any presidential candidate could have. He rose to the occasion. And Jerry Springer happened to be on that program and explained that the governor did not want him to go down there. The mayor of Indianapolis did not want him to go down there. That it was just too dangerous. And I've even talked to people who were there that night, neighbors of mine, who told me if he hadn't given that speech, Indianapolis would have burned. If he hadn't said what he'd said, Indianapolis would have been burned. That whole neighborhood, and it's a large area, would have burned.
Probably not.
The area he went into is still a benighted place. It's a place where they have a coke plant right next to houses right across
and
the street.
And by coke plant, we do not mean Coca-Cola. Or Bolivian marching powder, for that matter.
No. Oh, how I wish it was either of those two. That'd be a lot more benign. No, I'm talking about burning coal. Thank you, Joe Manchin.
But you know what? I got an answer to my question. Micah wrote in and she said, Springer, yeah, he was one of the reasons I fought being who I was for as long as I did. I didn't want to be associated with that. I didn't want to be associated with all of that. Didn't they out a trans man on Survivor once? Yeah, his name is Zeke Smith. On a heartwarming note, though, the guy who outed him was immediately voted out and fired from his job, so silver linings. And then as to voting for Joe, Micah says put a clothespin on your nose and vote for Joe Manchin like your life depends on it, because for people like you and me, it does. That's politics sometimes, especially in the U.S. It fucking sucks, but here we are.
Can we get a diving bell and then parade in front of the almost heaven and then just drill a hole in the bottom of it until it ends up in the bottom of the Potomac with nobody on board, of course, because there's going to be a big parade there. And we all know Joe can't.
There's going to be a big parade. Oh, you're banging on all 16 tonight.
Now, as for personal news.
Yes.
I told you that Christine will be coming home on the 20th of May.
Right.
I was wrong. Our girl has been working really hard up there in Chicago, and she is coming back on the 6th of May.
Oh, you must be so excited.
I am absolutely beside myself waiting, Robin. I really am. I can't wait to see her. I really can't. She's still learning her Braille, and the way they're teaching her, and it makes a lot of sense. They're teaching her her letters first. Then they're going to teach her punctuation. And then the third class will be contractions.
You know, so, it goes to show how being sighted causes one to never think about things. Okay, because I've been in, you know, you go into an elevator and you can feel the Braille for the floor numbers and stuff, but contractions, punctuation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Christine was an English major in college, and I lived with her for 30 years. So these kind of things bounce around in my brain often. And I asked her, I said, honey, when are they going to teach you punctuations and things like that? She goes, oh, that's after I learn my alphabet first. Then it's punctuations, then it's contractions. And it might be even placement. How do you know when a new paragraph begins? I mean, if you're sighted, there's an indentation. But if you're not, what tells you it's a new paragraph? You know, that sort of thing. I figured since you were a practitioner of the art of word knowing, you might find that a little bit interesting.
I'm absolutely fascinated.
The thing is, she had her ears cleaned. She had an earwax problem. It was because of the hair in her ears. They want her to trim her ear hairs, and she goes, I'm too nervous to do that, or my nose hairs, because I'm afraid I'll screw it up and push the tool in too far. And she goes, I'll let somebody else do that.
You know, and frankly, we've just done a number on Dinner in the Mountain Daylight Time Zone.
I know. I should have put the warm.
But
any time up.
It's funny. It's funny. I've told this story before, but every time I hear nose hairs, because let's just go ahead and ruin dessert too. I time travel. Kurt Vonnegut said Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. Every time I hear that, I time travel, and I'm little, and I'm in a barber shop in Alabama, and across the way, across from the barber chair from me, there's a shelf, you know, with all the lotions and the ointments and the unguents and the and the emoluments.
Right.
And there's a card, big cardboard display with these little rotary trimmers on it, and they're in a little plastic tube. And in bold red letters, it says, "Never pull nose hairs. May lead to infection and death." Now, I'm maybe 5 years old when I'm reading that. And went to the same barber for years and years and years. And every time I went in there, the same card, "Do not pull nose hairs. May lead to infection and death." And, you know, when you're a little kid, every now and then you go kind of go mining because, you know, Kleenexes aren't around or whatever. And you go, ow! And, you know, and there's a little hair on it. And you're like, am I going to die?
Well, I remember it's mentioned barbershop. I remember when I was 4 years old, it had to be one of my first haircuts. My dad went into his barbershop and they put me up on the chair in a booster seat, which was pretty much just a little board they put over the arms of the chair, sat me down on it so the barber could reach me. And then he proceeded to cut my hair. And I thought it was going to be, he came at me with those clippers and I was scared to death. But after a while, it didn't bother me until it got real close to my ears. And then I was done. But yeah, I thought I think we should just put up a sign that anytime I'm on the air, you might as well stop eating.
Yeah. What we need is a siren or that general quarters klaxon from World War II Navy. Bang, nang, 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 nang.
Yeah, exactly.
Put down the fork and back your chair away from the dinner table. This ain't going to end well.
Well, I had a bit of comeuppance a couple of days ago. I was listening to a repeat of the show that I called in on, and you and Scott were talking about toes. So I was eating some ramen when that came up, and I thought, all right, I deserve that. You know, I acknowledge the God of my tender mercies. I think the only way that a real Democrat in West Virginia would get a shot at Joe Manchin's office is if he got washed overboard during a storm on the Potomac. He's there for as long as he wants to be, unfortunately.
Well, that's one thing I didn't mention about the Republican primary. It's not just make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice. Somebody else already announced for that primary, and that was one of our two members of Congress, Alex Looney Mooney. He's not actually a West Virginian. He's from Maryland. At one point in time, I think he was head of the Maryland Republican Party, but he couldn't get elected to any kind of office. He couldn't get elected, so he crossed the border. He crossed the border with some maggot money and got himself a seat in West Virginia. We used to do a pretty good job here of growing our own politicians, Republican or Democrat. But now the leading contender for the governor's office is a pharmaceutical pusher from New Jersey and a fetus fetishist and a transphobe. And here's Alex Looney Mooney from Maryland.
politics now, especially on the right, is no respect or residency requirements.
No.
Oh, we need a candidate in Texas. You know, we need a candidate in Georgia. Let's call down to Texas and get a washed-up football player. Yeah, that'll work. Of course, we are talking about Herschel Walker in that situation.
Yes, Walker, Texas Strangler.
You know, or, you know, Mehmet Oz of New Jersey running in the Pennsylvania race. I mean, but God damn it, if the Democratic Party did that, the Republicans would be raising all kinds of unholy hell. Well, he's not a resident of this state. You didn't seem to mind it when Herschel was running down in Georgia. Well, that's different. He played at Georgia, you know, that kind of shit. No, see, and in a lateral move, it's already been announced. I don't think it's been made official, but a certain junior senator of Indiana, Hal Braun, is exploring running for governor of my beloved state. I guess he can't handle being a one-term. He can handle being a one-term senator as long as he gets all the health benefits of being a one-term senator and then has the people of Indiana paying for the rest of it. So, and the Democratic Party locally, in cities and towns in Indiana, a Democrat can get elected. Joe Hogshead being a prime example. The mayor of Indianapolis, who used to be a member of Congress. And the man's not doing a bad job. But
considering what he has to work with in terms of state government and the governor's office, he's probably doing an heroic job, and would be hailed as a great mayor if he were not dealing every day with a Confederacy of dunces.
Well, and then when I was growing up, what would be considered moderate Republicans pretty much ran the show because you had people like Otis Bowen and people like that who were not too far to the right. They knew they had to govern. But now it's, well, how are we going to screw people over and we got to prove to the base that we're more Christian than the rest guy? And, oh, my God, Robin. I would love just for once for some brave atheist to stand up there and go, you know what? There's nothing in the Indiana Constitution or in the federal Constitution that says you have to be a Christian to run for office. And I'm doing it. Yeah, I wish, but he'd probably get shot to death and get off of it because of the satanic panic.
Well, I mean, yeah. By the way, back to tomorrow's show in hell. Jeremy in Vermont says, tomorrow's show in hell will be about former radio hosts who are mad that they've devolved so far that their current job is testing the ripeness of pineapples the hard way. Special guest and lead pineapple inspector will be Rush Limbaugh, who now has both hands tied behind his back to make the inspection process a little more interesting. Thank you, Jeremy. My friends, with both my hands tied behind my back.
Yeah. Well, you got Rush. You got Ronnie. You got Dolph. All three of them sitting there going, ow, ow.
Ooh, you know, that stings.
Because it's always 2 o'clock in hell. It's 2 o'clock. Yeah. Well,
it's always two. Yeah, that's good. Wait a minute. Well, we have been all sure, over. We have been all over the place, Dave.
Yes, we have.
Braille punctuation. Yeah. Various and sundry areas where hair grows.
Right.
Lots of daughters.
Earwax.
Lots of daughters in the afterlife.
Earwax.
I was trying to get past that.
Okay, well.
You're not making it any easier. Hey, I do need to send out a thank you. Thank you to Saul. Hey, Saul, it's great to hear from you. Been listening for years. Was surprised when you announced your transition. I'm happy to see you're living your true self. Keep up the good work. You and the show are superb. I don't get a lot of superbs. Thank you for that, Saul. That's so kind. So I can happily announce that we're down to 1295. We're making progress, 1295, so we are, we're getting there.
Thankfully.
Yeah, I think it's 1295. Pretty sure. And that makes tomorrow a little more possible. The problem is there's a thing that has to be paid this evening, period. End of sentence. No questions asked. And if we could knock out a couple more $100, I could do that, and we would know for sure that there will be a program tomorrow. So that's where it stands. But I just love that. You and the show are superb. I can kind of live on that for a week and a half or so, Saul. That's wonderful. I'm just checking the chat room here. Okay, so going back into the stack, I got a note from Darlene in Connecticut. Not sure why hubby DiFi is being expected to talk sense into DiFi, seeing he's been forgot about that. We regret the error, seeing as he's been pushing up daisies for at least a year now. Insiders say his death precipitated her decline. Not a fan, but. She may have no idea her legacy is being ruined by her unwillingness or lack of mental capacity to resign. You know, Darlene, even as I was saying that, I was going, wait, isn't he maybe? Thanks for catching my error. That might be a phone number even Gavin Newsom doesn't have. The theory being, however, that somebody that if the governor of California calls somebody or goes to visit or whatever, there has to be a way to remedy this.
As I understand it, she's suffering from shingles, isn't she?
That is the public pronouncement, that she has been suffering from shingles since February.
And older people, that condition can hang on like grim death, especially if she's had it before.
And if not, well, and the after effects, the permanent nerve damage. I mean, I have some experience with this because I watched it happen to my father. And he hurt for the rest of his days, even after it was gone.
I had it a few years ago. And Robin, I wished for death. I mean, I was like, death cannot be this busy. What in the hell's going on? I had another friend who'd had it before, and he'd previously been shot in his life. He said, I'd rather be shot again. It's extremely painful.
And again, I'll ask the same question I asked on Friday. This is a woman who has not been out, I hate even using the phrase, out of her mind for a long time. She hasn't been. Best health care on earth. One wonders what kind of condition she might have had that would have prevented her from getting the shingles vaccine. And again, Frank, remember?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, shingles, it is not impossible that it is shingles, but there was too much smoke for there not to be fire from like a year, 2 years ago, saying that she just wasn't with it.
You think it might be, I hate to say it, but it sounds like she might be, it might not be shingles, it might be early onset dementia.
No, it might be full-blown dementia. But again, we're speculating. The thing that just drives me bananas, however, is the concept that we're familiar with, that great crises and great calamities come from seemingly innocuous, inconsequential things. This feels like it could be one of them.
As long as
Joe Manchin is out there trying to cuddle up to what he perceives to be the maggot base in West Virginia, then these 50-49s are going to continue to happen. Or maybe 51-48s. You know, if it's something that Curtsy and Kirsten Sinema decides to fuck us on, too.
Well, there's always that.
52-47, but, if it's 52-47, if say, Chris Coons decides to go along with it.
If she did resign, wouldn't Governor Newsom have the authority to name an interim senator?
He would not only have the authority, he would have the... He would have the requirement.
Constitutional duty.
Yes.
Yeah. He has a constitutional duty to do so.
And we went over all of this on Friday, and we all agree that it would be patently unfair for him to appoint either Katie Porter, Adam Schiff, Barbara Lee.
Or anybody that's announced
that has announced they're going to run. And Barbara Boxer is out there enjoying her retirement, and she might be willing to take one for the team and go back to D.C. for a year and a half, and then let either Schiff or Porter or Lee pick up where she leaves off. But this, you know, this is not a California issue. This is a United States of America issue.
Welcome to the rise and fall of the experiment.
I remember when I was doing a lot more work in D.C. than I have been lately, I would walk around the especially the House office buildings. I saw it some in the Senate. Without fail, it was in Republican offices. There'd be a sign outside the door that says, "This office belongs to the people of Maggot Stan." Okay?
Right.
And it was just such an obvious lie. Everybody in that office was paid out of the United States Treasury. That member of Congress was paid out of the Treasury of the United States of America. They were not.
Which means every man, woman, and child is donated.
Yeah. And what's more, if it's, say, Alabama or Mississippi Stan, then the degree to which the people of those states or districts pay the salary of those offices is probably negative money. New Yorkers are paying for a congressman from Mississippi Stan. Californians are paying for a congress critter from Louisiana Stan. It's a fact.
This is what you have when you have 50 minor countries.
Petty fiefdoms, as I call them.
Well, Indiana's got enough population to be considered a small country in the world. That's scary, Robin. Indiana, can you imagine Indiana as an independent country? I'd like to be deported to the United States, please. I still would like to be deported to the United States. But, yeah, they start burbling and braying about their First Amendment right to carry firearms around. That's so they can tell everybody else what to say and think and not say in public. And how dare you mention the fact that I'm carrying an AR-15 around in public because you're violating rights. So you're a member of the National Guard? No. You're a cop? Well, maybe sometime. I like to think I am. No. You know. Every right in the Constitution has a limitation inherent in that right. Even fat dead Tony Scalia said that every right guaranteed in the Constitution can have some reasonable restrictions. You can't cover a false statement to the police about a crime, especially one in progress, and that's not covered by your free speech rights. You know, that sort of thing. Or the old example of yelling fire in the theater, although the theater's been burning for a while now, Robin.
Yes.
Just nobody's been willing to say anything. You know, they've been watching the show on the stage for quite a while, and they just won't. They don't want to bother others, even though there are flames all around them. If there's a heaven, I've got to go to one, because I'm sure in hell no.
I get it. Well, Dave, you have yourself a good evening, my friend, and congratulate Christine on her her accelerated performance.
And, well, not only that, but her early triumphant return.
Yes.
The guy who's watching the trailer and feeding the kitties has reported that our wayward cat, Bootsy, who decided to scamper out the door about a week ago, is back home where her food bowl is and probably won't come back out until mom comes home. But she's an old cat, so we aren't too worried about her. She knows what to do. And so I'll talk to you later, Robin.
All right, Dave, you take care of yourself. All right, bye. Our buddy Dave in the Blind. And, well, lines are open if you want to get involved with the program. If there's something that you want to get said. Either way, the stress line is open at 844-843-4676. Or on Skype, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, one word, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. They both get you into the program. And that will engender some conversation. Oh, what else? Because I've got a stack. Down in Texas, and I told you this would happen, a school district there has a school play scheduled. Wait a minute. Wrong verb tense. A school there had a school play scheduled. It was a field trip. The students were going to go and watch a play. We did that when I was in school. When I was a kid. It was always fun. When we were seniors in high school, they took us little heathen kids all the way to Memphis, Tennessee to watch an opera called Manon. I stayed awake for most of it. Well, in the case of the Spring Branch Independent School District, they were going to the Main Street Theater for a performance of a play called, you've probably heard of this, James and the Giant Peach. James and the Giant Peach was originally a book by Roald Dahl. The play is intended for audiences as young as first grade. Well, the field trip is off because of one fucking parent. One ignorant, benighted, stupid, mean-spirited, bigoted parent. KTRK-TV reported a statement received from the Spring Branch ISD. Spring Branch ISD's pending field trips to the Main Street Theater performance of James and the Giant Peach are being canceled due to concerns raised about the age appropriateness of the performance. Again, the play is intended for audiences as young as first grade. Why? Because some grunting, barking, bleating, braying, knuckle-walking, tooth-picking with toenail clippings parent went knuckle-walking and mouth-breathing to the school board meeting and said, "They is actors in that their play, what plays both the men's and the women's." Oh, sugar, wait till you hear about Twelfth Night. One parent, ruined a field trip for an entire classroom. The marketing director of Main Street Theater said the parent is so wrong. Shannon Emmerich is the marketing director and said drag is a different art form. There's a whole art form that is drag. The amazing thing is the kids just believe the story. They're not interested in any agendas or anything else anyone thinks is going on. Another parent who's pissed off, Sherry Thomas, said, "Drag's not a big deal. It's been part of our culture for years. But it doesn't matter. They ain't going to see James and the Giant Peach." Because of one stupid parent. Does a giant peach have a gender? Anybody? Bueller? Is a girl playing Peter Pan? Or is a girl playing James? Do these idiots know about Peter Pan? Where people like Sandy Duncan played Peter Pan for a decade or more? For the youngsters in the audience, Sandy Duncan is a cis woman. But Peter Pan is supposed to be a boy who wants to never grow up, which kind of implies prepubescence. And whoever plays Peter Pan needs to be able to be flown around on a wire with a harness. Assuming that this idiotic parent would ever so much as get within an area code of a performance of The Tempest, what gender is Caliban? For that matter, what gender is Ariel? I've seen productions of The Tempest where Caliban was played by a guy, Ariel was played by a girl. It's the way it was when we did it in college. But I've also seen productions of The Tempest where both Caliban and Ariel are women. I've seen a production where Caliban is a woman and Ariel is a boy. Because, you know, the Elizabethan theater just rolled like that. This is the same era that gave us the King James Bible. Shh. Don't tell that Spring Branch ISD parent that the guys who wrote the King James Bible were probably, you know, G-A-Y. Shh, damn it. Some actors were playing both men and women in the performance. Say it was inappropriate for children. So I'm giving hell to the parent. But how much hell does the Spring Branch ISD deserve for not having the starch to look at the parent and say, "You're an idiot. You are stupid. You are a dum-dum. If your brains was gas, you wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss-ants motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. You're a twit. A boob. You make me wonder about the safety of your children." But the whole point of bigotry is to raise another generation of bigots. Imagine how terrified that parent must be of the very prospect that their child might not be cisgender and heterosexual and Christian and white. Because I feel like 99.999999% certain that this is a white parent. I mean, come on. Karen. This is a Karen. But the kids aren't going to see James and the Giant Peach. Because forget about it, Jake. It's Texas. Meanwhile, there's a bill in, where else, Florida. HB 991. This goes back a ways. But it allows people to sue journalists, publications, social media users, just users, for defamation if they say that a racist is a racist, if they say that a sexist is a sexist, if they say that a homophobe is homophobic, or a transphobe is transphobic. And the bill goes so far as to actually say that the truth cannot be a defense. That is one of the cornerstones of defamation law in the United States of America, probably going back to Mariolde Engeland. The truth is an absolute defense, not a qualified defense, not a maybe defense. The truth is an absolute defense. but if some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian gets called a sexist for being a sexist or a racist for being a racist, the aforementioned Christian Republican can sue. And even if counsel for the publication or the user, the social media user, any ordinary person, even if counsel for them steps forward and says, and presents an entire body of evidence that shows that the maggot in question, because this is going to be maggots, shows that the maggot in question is in fact a sexist or a racist or a homophobe or a transphobe, in Florida, the truth does not matter. And so since it's with relation to the internet, it doesn't even have to happen in Florida. If you've never even set foot in Florida, but you write the you see a story about some filthy bigot of a Christian Floridian, and you tweet about it, and they find out about it under this bill, if it passes the House and passes the Senate and gets signed by Monkey Up, they can see. Freedom, y'all. Note coming in from John in Central PA, subject Feinstein. I hate to say this, but the Feinstein thing is the party leadership's fault, at least in part. Just last week or so, Nancy Pelosi said the push for her to resign is rooted in sexism, even though Feinstein is clearly incapacitated. Everybody can see it. How long has Schumer known about that her condition was precarious? Good question, John. And you'll forgive me if I go where I'm about to go. But they sure didn't have any problem running Al Franken the hell out of the Senate. The Upright Decency Patrol wouldn't hear anything else. But here we are. We also have a case of, or an installment in Today in Dirty Clarence Thomas. A guy named Mark Poletta from the National Review, which is a filthy white supremacist rag, penned an article, an opinion piece, saying that Fappy Thomas is as pure as the driven snow, and that Fappy did not, this is a quote, did not have to disclose such trips, said that Fappy acted properly and consistent with the rules, and that this is all a matter of the Democrats trying to delegitimize the Supreme Court. Mark Paletta continued and said,
"This latest effort by the left has nothing to do with ethics. It has everything to do with trying to destroy the Supreme Court now that there's a working majority of justices moving the court firmly in an originalist direction."
And he went on and said, "Yeah,
I remain close friends with Fappy.
It's only one problem. There is something out there called journalistic ethics. And in penning this apologia for Fappy Thomas, he didn't disclose that he was on all the same trips that Fappy Thomas and Ginsurrectionists took on Harlan Crow's dime. Huffington Post's Huff Post, I guess they're Huff Post now, wrote, "So a funny thing happened when he posted the op-ed on Twitter. A lot of people showed up with receipts. They had pictures of Mark Pauletta sitting with Fappy Thomas and others in the great outdoors. Oops. And from in any given program, it always helps to have a little bit of Mango Mussolini stupidity. God, he's dumb. Today, he was in the Granite State doing a campaign rally. Remember, this is the guy who said that all the Navy's aircraft carriers needed to continue operating with steam catapults because electromagnetic catapults were stupid. This is also the same nitwit Nero, emphasis on the nitwit, who said that windmills are creating tons and tons of bat and birdie ceviche and give people who live near them the cancer. They get the cancer. Well, now we're on to electric vehicles. Get the hockey puck, y'all. This is going to be stupidly delightful, but the emphasis on the stupid.
To do that, we're all part of a team. And if you want to buy a car powered by an internal combustion engine or a hybrid, or if you want to buy an electric car, some people like an electric car, like what, 4% of the people? You'll be able to do it long into the future. We're going to put it all back. And if you want to have a gas stove, you're going to be able to have a gas stove too.
Gas stoves. Not electric.
Can you imagine them saying you can only buy electric cars when they don't go far enough, they don't drive long enough, when some people don't like them, and when the batteries are all made 100% in China or in areas that China controls? Who is coming up when we have...
Canada? China controls Canada? Did I miss a communist revolution? Any of the Canadian contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation want to give a girl a clue? Have you noticed that his speech patterns have changed? And he's gotten kind of growly here and there? Yeah. Because he has. And the maggots just eat up the gas stove stuff.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, in the Granite State. Sometimes I just turn on the gas until I get a little lightheaded. It makes me feel more patriotic that way.
More liquid gold under our feet than any other country, including Saudi Arabia and Russia. But we're not allowed to use it. The electric car takes so much energy to create the battery that they won't break even environmentally, if you're a believer in that. The making of the battery throws off more, let's call it, dirt into the air. Dirt.
You what, Edith? Making an electric battery throws dirt into... Just another day without the rot gut tequila. Dirt. Let's call it dirt.
I'll call it dirt.
Into the air than anything you're going to do by driving one of our very beautiful cars around for a long period of time. So they don't say it.
Dude can't drive. Did you ever notice? Dude cannot operate a motor vehicle. I bet he doesn't even have a driver's license. But it's one of our beautiful automobiles.
But very importantly, China has all the minerals, has everything you need to make the batteries. They're going to make them. We don't have that. We have everything. We don't have that. This is opposition research. This is really incredible. when you look at...
I don't know if it's coming through on the feed or not. Every now and then, the maggots will, stand on their hind feet and clap a little bit. But for the most part, when Nitwit Nero's talking, do you hear the murmuring in the background? Marge, what's he talking about? We like our Prius. Gasoline's expensive now. Listen for the murmuring.
Get it. You know, I saw this saying about a month ago. I realized how crazy the borders, ridiculous. We don't want to open borders. April Fool's, right? Remember, it's like everything's April Fool's Day. All electric cars.
No, everything's Infrastructure Week.
It's April Fool's Day. I don't mind electric cars. You should have everything. Some people might like electric. Some people might like something else. Some people might like a motor scooter. Let them get whatever the hell they want. But to force them... When we don't have
freedom.
Enough electricity for ourselves, you go out to California, they want all electric cars, and yet they have brownouts during the summer and blackouts. The whole state goes out, and then they say, oh, let's hook up another couple of million cars. The whole thing is crazy. It's crazy. And that's why I say April Fools, everything, they don't want voter ID. How simple is voter ID?
We're getting rid of the beautiful, great steam catapults on our aircraft carriers. It's crazy. It's all April Fools.
Jesus, Grandpa Simpson. Go drink your prune juice.
We don't want voter ID. Why don't they want voter ID? Because they want it cheap. That's all. Our opponents...
They're not even clapping at this point. They're just grunting. You know, I say grunting and barking and braying and bleating. This is that. This was supposed to be... a speech about, his campaign for the presidency, I guess, maybe. And of course, everything he's saying is just a matter of things that the spirochetes are screaming each to each inside the thin gray settlings in his skull cavity that pass for brains. He was in downtown Manchester at the Doubletree Hotel. That's the hotel that always smells like chocolate chip cookies. That's a Doubletree thing. The EPA, meanwhile, has said unequivocally, greenhouse gas emissions associated with an electric vehicle over its lifetime are typically lower than those for an average gasoline-powered vehicle, even when accounting for manufacturing. Oh! This stupid. It burns us.
Just know that no one can match us on the economy, and that's the reason that we're way up in the polls. We have polls. I'm going to show you a couple of them. So today, a very respected poll came out. Emerson, big, big poll. It has Trump...
Bask in the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow. He said Emerson. Wasn't Emerson an electrical appliance company? We had a fan here from before I was born that was Emerson Electric.
Thank you.
And waving their little red hats at him.
Thank you very much. And I love you too. That's why I'm doing this. I had a nice life. I didn't have to go before grand juries every time I fly over a state. If I fly over...
the truth slips out. I didn't have to go to a grand jury every time I fly over a state. Oh, I do believe. I am a fan of combustion in one sense. I am a fan of spontaneous combustion. And I remain convinced that if we watch long enough, we're going to watch him perform that elusive but sometimes suspected phenomenon known as spontaneous human combustion. And the maggots will be chanting, "We love Trump," the whole time. And here's another thing. It's not a very big crowd. He's not drawing like he used to. And they sit in the cheap seats and mumble and grumble a lot until some operative gets them going with a "We Love Trump" chant. Yeah, that's all they were screaming, Ralphs. "We love Trump." Well, I stand, actually sit, corrected. Thank you, Lee in New York. Nitwit Nero does have a driver's license. And it says that he's smaller than he claims, and he says, "Stormy knew." Yeah. Oh, did I forget to mute that? Yeah, you're right. You're right, Brother Bishop Steve in Georgia Stan. Sounded like a half-empty VFW hall. Irish Dave pointing out Emerson TV had TV T&V sets too also. Half-empty VFW hall. Half a piece of chewed bubblegum, Steve. Sorry. Electric car batteries throw dirt into the air. And leaves, the electric cars don't go far enough. It might be because of having to haul a 239-pound person who makes perfect phone calls. By the way, he must think internal combustion engine cars are made by fairies? Gnomes? Nah, it's leprechauns and hillbillies. You know, more things that aren't real. What an evening. What a world, what a world, what a world. Hey, I was gonna mention something. The Kansas legislature has been on a veto override tear of late. And it's not nice. They overrode one gubernatorial veto to enact a law that says the state government of Kansas shall not recognize No, wait a minute. This is too good. Darlene, cowbell. I'd love to hear Trump, Darlene in Connecticut writes, try to pronounce Quinnipiac Poll.
Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac. I'm definitely ahead in the Quinnipiac Poll. Definitely. Believe me. It's a great poll because I'm first in it. Those folks... over at Kunipupiak, really know how to do a poll.
Is that something? Is that close to what you would expect, Darlene? You may get your wish at some point. But back to Kansas for just a second. Oh, and by the way, Micah says, funny, two of my new best friends actually live in the middle of a wind farm. It's picturesque as hell. Don't tell Nitwit Nero. Let me find it here real quick. Oh, yeah. Okay. Mission accomplished. Darlene says, yep. The Kansas House overrode Governor Laura Kelly's veto of a piece of legislation called SB 180. I am not exaggerating when I say this. The entire, every governmental entity in the state of Kansas is now statutorily forbidden to recognize even the existence of people like me. Now, Kansas is going to get sued. They'll probably lose some federal funds. But when I've talked in the past about my desire to drive across country, and how I have to be careful about what states I pass through. Kansas is wider than it is tall. I talked about going to New Mexico. Well, there would be 6 hours of Missouri and as many of Kansas before I could get to the safe haven that is Colorado. And that's not taking into account having to drive through Taliban, Indiana, and Kentucky stand. Let's say some Kansas cop pulls me over. With this law, if he decided to arrest me for, you know, whatever, stream littering, I would be thrown in a men's jail. And might not make it out of there alive. Because throwing a trans woman in a men's jail is nothing but a sentence of rape. It's horrible. Trans men, trans women, non-binary people do not exist, have been erased from existence in the state of Kansas. I've said before, I don't necessarily like talking about these issues. They trigger the shit out of me. But I feel a moral imperative here to warn, as I have been warning for damn near two decades, about the rise of fascism in this country. It's not rising anymore. It's here. It is here. It's mostly not safe for me where I live right now. But it's not as awful as Kentucky or Tennessee or God knows Kansas or Missouri. A genocide in the making begins, and remember, I forget if it was Matt Pubeface Walsh or Michael Knowles, the Reagan greasy hair wannabe, who said you can't genocide trans people because trans people don't exist in the first place. He's just skipping a step. What happened out in Montana was a step on the road to genocide. Zoe Zephyr will not be allowed to even set foot inside the capital of Montana now. She can vote on bills, but she can only watch the proceedings remotely, and she cannot speak. She has been muzzled. And this is a part of genocide. Deny the existence, erase the people who exist, from civic life, silence opposition. After that, it's just a question of whether you're using guns or having a little conference at Vanzai and ordering up some Zyklon B. And I am not engaging in hyperbole when I say this. This is who they are. And again, in Kansas, I owe such a humongous thank you. Gino in Utah, along with everyone else who has helped out tonight, you have made sure there will be a program tomorrow. And there will be. You know, assuming everything goes okay with Roy at 7 a.m. Thank you so much, Gino. This stuff scares me to death. And you've taken a lot of fear and stress off of me, and I appreciate it. We all do. Thank you. Back to Kansas, real quick. There's a Republican state senator in Kansas, one of the people who voted to erase the existence of people like me. His name is Mark Steffen. It was back in March, and this is finally just now making it into the news. It was published in on a platform called the Kansas Reflector. Mark Steffen is toxic. And a young woman, a recent graduate of Wichita State University, I think that would be the Shockers, Regina Nazir, who is a campaign organizer with Loud Light, was part of a group of young people who visited Hutchinson, Kansas Senator Mark Steffen. Regina Nazir saw a great big honking old Bible on his desk and already knew that he was a God botherer of a 33rd degree God botherer. Regina Nazir said, "I obviously knew a little bit of background about him, but I didn't want to just write him off just yet. I wanted to have a chance to let him speak for himself." So she addressed Senator Steffen and said, "I'm a Muslim, and I'd like to know how you plan to represent me as one of your constituents." And Hutchinson maggot Senator Mark Steffen laughed at the little lady.
"Well, I'd be happy to try and convert you."
Regina Nazir said, "I already know that a lot of senators think that way, but it was still jarring to hear him say it without any hesitation. Usually I'm able to kind of lay off the situation, kind of be a little bit like, okay, yeah, but in the situation I was just sort of speechless." The Kansas Reflector then listened to an actual recording of the interaction that contained Mark Steffen saying exactly what Regina Nazir said he said. And then when they asked Mark Steffen, he said, "That's not true. That's a false statement, 100%. That's all I got to say." Of course, there were other people in the room who confirmed it and said he never retracted his statement. Because they said, you know, there are Jews in here and atheists too. A 22-year-old Jewish girl, Jenna Dozier, who is a political science major at Wichita State, said being promised equal representation at the convenient of religious conversion to Christianity is extremely inappropriate for a state senator. In Kansas, we believe in the First Amendment that allows us to practice our religion of choice. Senator Mark Steffen should be ashamed for his remarks, said to Regia and I. So they've asked Stefan to issue an apology and state that he will respect all faiths. And they call on the Senate president, another maggot by the name of Ty Masterson, to denounce what Mark Stefan said. Well, they can hope. Mark Stefan brays and bleats about wanting godly legislative action.
The Kansas Senate is back in session. It's time to override our wildly liberal governor. The well-being of our society is in the balance. Pray for wisdom and godly results.
Dude would be completely happy in a United States modeled on the theocracy of, I don't know, Saudi Arabia, Iran. So we are down to $995 to go to fully fund the month of April. We've got a fighting chance tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thank you so much. Heck of a program this evening, if I do say so myself. We don't see a lot of Have a Show on Me's. Gino did one this evening, and thank you so much. Thanks to Lori up in Michigan and everybody in between. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. We are short a subscriber for the 27th of the month. If somebody would like to just be a $10 subscriber so that we don't have an empty day, that would be wonderful. Thank you. And thank you to our a la carte contributors. And thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Roger and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe whatever platform you listen to the podcast on. I know you hate that. You hate this. You hate it when I mention fundraising, but it's the only way I know to build the program and keep the program going. I'm sorry. But like and subscribe and share it with your friends and neighbors and leave a comment. And, well, maybe there will be, as we approach the beginning of the third decade of me behind a microphone, well, hopefully we'll keep it all going. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Oh, Brother Deacon says, Nitwit Nero says,
I put up dirt.
Because his Swiss cheese brain can't recall the term carbon footprint. Also, the carbon footprint payback period is on average 3 years. Thanks for that, Brother Deacon. Please stay safe. Get your booster. We heard from Paul from Parts Unknown yesterday. That was great. Get your booster. Look into whether you need to get another one based on your age and how long it's been since the last one. Wear your mask, especially when you're around maggots, because they're filthy. They put out a lot of dirt. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you wherever you go, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. You can lighten up a little bit in the warm weather months. Then, for God's sakes, if... some Midwestern maggot comes towards you saying,
I'd like to try to convert you.
Well, avoid that maggot like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.